Tonight's Full of BS podcast is brought to you on the BJBSJ Podcast Network by Jeez, where is it? Oh, Christ. I can't find it, Scarzi. One goddamn ad. That's all we have. To hell with it.
All right, no one's listening anyway. I'm ready to go, but first, our friends from Al Jam.
Warning. The hosts of this program are not broadcast professionals. They have no idea what they're doing. They are bad at this. One of them uses swear words. A lot. All complaints about this show are correct. You have been warned. This is your last chance to download a real podcast. Okay, you asked for it. Here are Dave Brown and Iron Mike Irons. This is Entitled Town.
Al, thank you. Entitled Town Orchestra, thank you very much. You are listening to Entitled Town Community Theater. My name is Mike Irons. I'm joined, as is the new normal, as we put it, by Patrick Scartelli. Mr. Scartelli, how are you?
I am doing good, and I should wish to apologize to our dozens of listeners that we were unable to record last week because of who else? Al. He said he caught strep throat.
He was unavoidably detained.
He was unavoidably detained. He has he brought us a doctor's note that was signed by the Broncos team physician. I'm not buying it, not for one second.
So not only was he cheating with the note, he probably circumvented the Entitled Town salary cap, seeing it was coming from Denver.
He may have smeared Vaseline all over the envelope, too, to make it hard to hang on to.
Yeah,
but we're getting ahead of ourselves.
We are getting ahead of ourselves. We'll get to what we saw, Broncos 18, Patriots 12, on Sunday at Foxborough in a gruesome performance, kind of in line with the time of year. But I want to ask you for your thoughts, comments, and opinions, Patrick, on Mookie Betts and the Los Angeles Dodgers going to the World Series against the small market Tampa Bay Rays.
Oh boy. Yeah, I'm happy for Mookie, ? I'm happy for the AL East, ? It's, I think Major League Baseball likes that there's a major market team involved.
I think a Houston, a Tampa Bay against, the Tampa Bay against Atlanta would have been a ratings disaster online with WEEI for Fox. But they got the Dodgers, they got the story, and I'm on record with this. I love Mookie Betts, and I'm never going to actively root against Dave Roberts. I can't do it. It's not in my DNA.
Exactly. It's they're a bit of a hard luck story for being the Los Angeles Dodgers, just not being able to get over the hump as of late. And like you say, Dave Roberts, the fellow who ostensibly should not be able to pay for a drink in Boston.
They've won eight straight division titles. They've been to the World Series 3 out of 4 years now. It's they, as you mentioned, they haven't been able to get over the hump. It's something I want to see the Celtics do, obviously, but it's going to be an interesting World Series. The Red Sox obviously took the best and the brightest to try to run their new small market team with up here back in Boston. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people. I think you and I are fairly in lockstep on our opinion about the Betts trade, and I'm openly disdainful about it. I do think that Chaim Bloom is a smart guy, and there are people mutual friends of ours that we have honest and passionate disagreements about it make me question myself enough, but it is the Dodgers are going to the World Series. The Red Sox have circled the bowl the last 2 years. So, go Mookie, go Dave Roberts.
And the best we can, let time cook, I guess, is the hashtag.
That's right.
That we're going to go with on this.
The Tampa Bay's not, Tampa. Go ahead.
They're a likable squad, is what it comes down to as well. They have really to play in that ridiculous, ridiculous dome with the catwalks and the nonsense. But they didn't they didn't, you know, back their way in. They, you know, won more games than they lost, as opposed to, you know, a certain baseball team we could name that was in the playoffs.
Yeah, bang the drum slowly. Yeah, it's the two best. It's ironic that in a season where there was eight teams in each league making the playoffs using the essentially the NBA 1-8, et cetera, format, that the best record in each respective league is represented by the best team. So, or the best teams by there. So no one's listening to us for our fire takes on the Devil Rays and the Dodgers, or the Rays and the Dodgers, but
it does always come back to baseball. Sometimes we got to go back to football.
Yeah. Let's go back to football.
Okay.
All right. Sunday. I guess no practice matters, right? No practice, a banged up offensive line, and a quarterback coming back from COVID matters.
It very much matters, but you can tell how serious someone is by them, whether or not they believe that, you know, no practice is no excuse. That's just a load of nonsense there. They looked like a team that practiced twice in 14 days.
Belichick said as much today in his day after game kind of gathering with the media, insinuated that he also did. Belichick voluntarily, without an NFL mandate, closed down the facility in Foxborough on his own prior to the league actually did it, I believe, for one day.
Yes.
But I think that's the kind of stuff, the kind of stuff that you won't hear from most media in Boston, the willfully ignorant and the colossally stupid, the kind of stuff that proves that he cares about his players and his well-being, and he's maybe not the cold, heartless SOB he's been made out to be by the Knights of the Keyboard, who he treats with the appropriate amount of disdain.
You said it there. And they were one score away is what it comes down to. They played terrible. By they, I guess I mean mostly the offense. The defense, with the exception of a long play here and there, reminiscent of the old bend but don't break defenses of old.
It was kind of a classic performance. I mean, you look at Drew Lock's numbers. He was way below 50%. He made a couple of nice throws, but you're playing the percentages there. He didn't look like a very competent passer. And I got to tell you, I can't imagine being a fan of a team that's at this point in my life that's not coached by Bill Belichick. All that Denver tried to give them that game by throwing with essentially a quarterback who's in the first dozen or so starts of his career, doing play action and throwing down the field in the fourth quarter with a 2-score lead and then a 1-score lead and giving the Patriots field position. It is absolute absurdity and just malfeasance in coaching. You see it on a weekly basis, not just with Vic Fangio and the Broncos, but I actually said to you yesterday as we were communicating in the game, I was like, well, Vic Fangio might do something stupid here. And God damn it, he did.
Oh my goodness. Anytime you throw back-to-back interceptions.
An inexperienced quarterback throwing against arguably the best secondary in football, who had a epic year last year, taking the ball away from the likes of guys like Drew Lock.
Yeah, oh, big time. We're not here to, you know, provide all sorts of excuses. There were some problems made there by the offense, unfortunately. You know, you're not going to you should win if the other team only scores field goals, is what it comes down to.
It's the first time since Belichick's been coach of the Patriots where they lost. They're now 39-1 when holding the other team without a touchdown. I want to broach the proverbial elephant in the room here. Newton. And it's hard. I'll get it out of the way. The prerequisites. He hadn't practiced. He came down with COVID. Not practice, and Belichick and both Newton and Belichick paid light to the fact that it's hard to have the timing and the passing game and that sort of thing. And I think that played a huge role. And while they were so run heavy and conservative throwing the passes close to the line of scrimmage, which makes them easy to defend. And Denver has a pretty good defense. If Denver does one thing well, it's rush the passer and play defense. So there's a lot of things there that, that point to running the ball, despite what we were told by the dirty Patriot Spulpitz yesterday, or lectured at with the dirty Spulpitz yesterday. But
Scartellis don't care for the Spulpitz.
That Scartellis and the Spulpitz, yeah, it's like the Sharks and the Jets.
I could really, really stand for, you know, Cam not to have so many passes batted down for
a 6'5". What was the last 6'5" quarterback you saw had passes batted down that much?
I can't think of anyone.
His he shall not be named on this podcast today, I'll tell you that. The issue that one of our mutual friends once described Jay Crowder's jump shot as check windage, load the pole and vault it into the air like it was a slingshot. I feel that way about Newton loading the ball up. It takes forever. Everything about him yesterday was slow. His progressions were slow. His reads were slow. His delivery was slow. His decision-making was slow. And it's hard to succeed and play perfect when you can't get chunk plays. And that's been not just yesterday. It's been a theme this year where they've had to hold the ball and execute, you know, small chunks, small chunks, small chunks. And I love that kind of football, but you have to have, what's the immediate phrase du jour? You got to be able to take the top off. You don't necessarily have to do that, but you do have to be able to make them defend more than just within 10, 15, 20 yards of the line of scrimmage. Correct me
if I'm wrong. You got to keep them honest. Got to keep them honest and not expect that there's just going to be 3 yards and a cloud of pellets.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's Newton's a dynamic athlete, right? And I made the point earlier when I was speaking with you beforehand. Is he a quarterback or is he an athlete playing quarterback like Josh Allen or Trubisky? And at this point in his career, he's older. He's had a lot of injuries. He's taken a lot of hits. You know, thank God, you know, Bill the GM didn't take almost a scout Greg Bedard's advice and just throw more money at Newton. This is an evaluation year. I mean, is he – I don't know if he's the quarterback moving forward. I think – what's in front of him will certainly go a long way to telling us that. I see some warning flares there. I knew we were both in on one and enthusiastic after the first week or two, but there are some warning flares there.
Oh, exactly. And knock on whatever, maybe some of those rough edges can be filed off in practice.
Yeah. Practice. You know,
we are talking about practice and we came very close to using the AI rant before we realized everyone else did too.
Yeah, when I saw Steve Buckley use that joke, I wanted to gargle with Drano and just end it all. Jesus.
Great minds think alike. And then sometimes some not so great minds too.
And sometimes
we'll leave it to the listeners to figure out who's which on that one.
Sometimes minds don't think, Scartsy. Sometimes they don't think.
That's true as well.
All right, so they got the 49ers coming in to Foxborough next Sunday, who looked very good last night. I'm not looking forward to the Jimmy Garoppolo stuff, and we'll get to that in a moment. Actually, let's get to it right now.
Let's get to it right now because there's nothing that the media here like more than the quarterbacks who aren't playing here anymore. They love weekly updates about Brady, and they love Jimmy.
They love Jimmy. It's the blow-dried surfer girl Giardi is particularly fond of him. I wonder if Giardi will be at the airport holding a sign for Jimmy G, either in in Providence or at Logan when they fly in. You know, not on the day of the game, of course, because the NFL
absolutely made sure
that would never happen. They would not ignore their own mandate, right?
I can't see why we would say that.
So speaking of
integrity.
Absolutely. Integrity is just the ginger menace. So I was blissfully unaware of Yanni Korakis's existence until this morning. It was when I got up and started leafing through the Twitter machine. I'm going to read his quote from early Monday morning. Quote, a reminder with Jimmy Garoppolo coming to Foxborough this week that Bill Belichick spoke more glowingly about Jimmy G the day he traded him after 2.5 years than he did about Tom Brady after TB12 left after 20 years. He got dragged. Would you say that's an understatement?
Oh, he got jumped ugly and deservedly so.
Absolutely. Universally dragged for this horrible take. And I got to tell you, He combines the hairline of Champ Kind with the intellect of Brick Tamlin. This was his follow-up to that. Quote, "All right, since everyone is chirping me," chirping. Well, I'll get back to that. Begin quote again. "This wasn't literal. We know BB appreciates Brady and thinks he's the best quarterback ever, but you can't dispute his TB12 comments. Only a statement were underwhelming, and his Jimmy Garoppolo statements on air were overwhelming." Scartzy, you start off because I need a moment to gather myself.
You gather yourself. Well, the important thing here is that if we're counting the provenance numbers, we're probably doing something wrong.
Yeah, he's streaming all right. He's streaming down his leg after he got called out on his bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone... Never mind. He's dismissively referring to Belichick only releasing a statement in March after Brady signed with the Bucks. Brady signed with the Bucks on March 20th of 2020. In case he didn't remember, and judging by the idiot tweets, he didn't. It was the height of a global pandemic with a disease that nobody knew much about. So this blow-dried teleprompter-reading dummy wants Bill Belichick, a man in his late 60s, to schlep to Foxborough in front of the unwashed Knights of the Keyboard to give a statement about how he feels about Tom Brady. What kind of moron would extrapolate that from what Belichick has said, ignoring mountains of evidence otherwise?
Oh, it's not like Bill the coach had anything but, you know, praise for him for 20 years. That's, you know, easily searchable, easily findable. It's just a wild guess,
Scartzy, that he didn't take a look at that stuff, or he didn't have the institutional knowledge to do that. Rhode Island typical.
You just wanted attention, and sometimes you can't tell the difference between good attention and bad attention.
Yeah, sometimes my dog doesn't mind if you, you know, you slap them on the nose as long as they get the attention they need. But anyway, he's back to obscurity, Yanni Caracas on Channel 12 Rhode Island, and Channel 12 in Providence, Rhode Island. So he's candidate number one for Mediate of the Week. The second one is a perennial contender. You can set your watch to this asshole doing something arrogant. And again, he's underrated stupid because his arrogance trumps his stupidity. There's an old clip from NFL Films with Jerry Glanville saying that, but one get bad call, trump that bad call. I feel that way about every Bedard tweet. Every time I don't think he can expose himself as being more arrogant or more stupid, he does. I have some people who send me, I do not subscribe to the Boston Sports Journal. However, I'm thankful for those that take screenshots and send me the worst of his tripe. This is from his weekend daily briefing. The first one is regarding N'Keal Harry. Now, in light of Harry's goose eggs yesterday, maybe this isn't the best timing, but I feel like this needs to be pointed out. This is from Bedard's daily briefing over the weekend. "Some of you probably heard that I asked Harry a couple of tough questions earlier this week. Of course, the infantile minority of the Patriots fan base thought I was just being mean to Harry, that I knew what his answers were going to be, and I was just trying to irritate him. Actually, I wanted to ask Harry a couple of tough questions because I wanted to see how he would react. I wanted to look into his eyes, through Zoom now, sigh, and see where he stood mentally. I wanted to see if he had lost confidence or if he had still sick, clear eyes, and a full heart. Hit me with the tranquilizer, Dar, because I'm about to lose it."
The unmitigated gall of this guy.
That's using his own words for him. Mm-hmm. I swear to God, it was Sunday morning. I had 1,000 things to do yesterday when I read this stuff. And I posted this on Twitter with a minimum, it was presented without much bias. Skewering, allowing somebody to hang themselves with their own words is delicious. So N'Keal Harry, okay, the guy is an arrogant turd. This is unbelievable. This blew me away. I got a second screenshot. This is regarding, of course, this is a throwback to what you just said. Can't go without talking about Tom Brady or Garoppolo. So we talked about Garoppolo with Mediate number one. Let's go now to Evergreen Mediate number two, Greg Bedard. Quote, "I've got to say, I don't know how Brady puts up with Mike Evans. The more I watch him, the more I can't stand watching him. He consistently demonstrates bad body language and lacks toughness at times. Move on down the page. I don't think Evans and Brady care for each other all that much. Evans is exactly the type of receiver that Brady hates, has trouble getting open, and lacks mental and physical toughness. Mike Evans, in his first six seasons, he's now in his seventh season. Mike Evans has surpassed 1,000 yards every year of his career. He's been to the Pro Bowl three times. Okay, you say that's pre-Brady? Okay. The Buccaneers have played six games this year. Mike Evans has six touchdowns. I'm starting to think that Bedard doesn't know what the hell he's looking at, Scartzy.
I get that distinct impression as well. But my goodness, he's got himself a media empire, and we don't, I guess.
Yeah, but I'm going to eat one of my favorite lines. It may or may not contain a chicken.
That's right.
So there's always plenty of stuff regarding Bedard here. So I want to move on to media number three. This bothered me. Rich Teeth, WEEI, the erstwhile WEEI. If you haven't heard him lately, believe me, you're not alone. We're all familiar. If you're listening to this podcast, you're familiar with Miguel Benzon. He is the erstwhile Pats cap. I would argue, Scartzy, and I'm pretty sure you would agree with me, no one works harder and knows more about the salary cap and has provided more insight than the media horde, the unwashed horde following the team. Miguel works hard. He's smart. And he looks at things from different angles. He's a pretty good writer. And he presents everything honestly. Is that fair to say?
Very much so. Very much so. He's a great resource on Twitter. And he seems a decent guy as well.
Yeah. So if you want to give me a second here, this is from the Dale and Keefe program on Friday. And I almost called you to do an emergency podcast, as it was, to talk about Bedard stepping into shit all the time, Volin. But I have to have some level of sanity and professionalism in my professional life.
You do.
I try to demonstrate that, unlike Rich Teeth here. So let me start the clip here. I have to move it forward just a little bit. So bear with me here. This is Rich Keefe talking about Miguel Benzon on the Dale and Keefe show on Friday.
I want to jump in here, actually, if you don't mind. And I know this is an easy thing to do, is to pile on John. I'm actually going to defend John here for to which he did include salary cap consequences in the article, which you didn't read. Right, so what's lazier? Clickbait, lazy journalism, calling it that, or not clicking on the story itself, one that you're going to comment on? This guy's an absolute loser. He covers the salary cap in a league where the salary cap doesn't matter. His Twitter handle has all the little dollars and cents in there. Like, hey, thanks, Pat's cap. It doesn't matter. Bill Belichick himself has said you can manipulate salary cap. Last year, before they signed Antonio Brown, they had like $5.87. Then they gave him $9 million. Your existence is useless. Don't comment on John's article that you didn't read. You suck. You're a loser.
Wait a minute.
End rant on that guy. Go.
So the wacky sound effects aside, the content, talk about exposing using somebody, their own words to expose themselves, part and parcel right there.
Let me put it to you this way. 98.5 isn't going to hire you back
at all. That was
an audition tape for the Sports Hub. He's trying to get back there. That's the
What's
only
he gonna
explanation.
Do? Give large gymnasium foot rubs. I mean, is that going to be his role over there?
What are you saying? That I'm sure they got new room for another white dude.
I sometimes, believe it or not, I look in the mirror. When it comes to, I just kind of relentlessly go after people. You and I are, okay, I'm guilty of that. I have contempt for those who have contempt for their audience. And that's basically 98.5's existence. They're pissing on your head without you realizing it. Josh Marion and others, Cam and Taunton. Like, it's the sheep, the cult, that sort of thing. This stuff is sad. It kind of demonstrates who this guy is. Miguel Benzon is a man of honor. He raises money on his Twitter account. for I think it's Bread of Life in Malden. He's out in front of that stuff. He provides good information. It says everything you know about Rich Keefe and why that station and that show in particular is circling the bowl, and says more about the character. Miguel doesn't need me or anyone else to defend him. He's very capable of doing that himself. I wish he didn't go on that show in response to that, but I got to tell you, I would have done, and I'm not proud of this, I don't think I would have just gone on the show. I may have shown up in the studio.
You'd be within your right to do so, to be treated the way that they treated a decent fellow like that. But it just goes to show this. It's like it's the folks that are, you know, just playing a role is one thing, but the folks that believe the nonsense that they're talking about, like the whole practice thing, there are folks out there who who have watched Belichick for 20 years and have learned nothing. So no wonder they think practice doesn't matter.
Right. It's not the work that goes into it. It's not the preparation that goes into it. It's just roll the ball out on the field there, son. And I have to tell you that as bad as the community theater we had, the wacky bit we had starting the show, the sound effect there at the end is, oh, Jesus Christ. We're not broadcast professionals. They allegedly are. They allegedly get paid for it. Not much in Rich Teeth's case, but that's neither here nor there. Rich Teeth, your immediate number three. Scartzy, you know
this. Right, and this is our good buddy, All Hat Nick Cattles.
This guy is rocketing up the charts purely with association with the Greg Bedard podcast and both their watchers.
Yeah, but both both the watchers. Oh yeah, so he had this little Twitter interchange with someone talking about the post game breakdown kind of thing. So All Hat Nick Cattles had this to say. Cam takes a terrible sack, then missed an open Harry. They didn't deserve that game. Too much bad football and not enough good coaching. Some fellow on Twitter calling himself Not For Work 9 replied to him, comparing him favorably or unfavorably to Papa Bear Hallis. So Cattles replies, so you're cool with not challenging the white run for the first? You're also fine with declining the penalty that would have knocked Denver out of field goal range? Fun joke, though. And he closed on another tweet with regarding Belichick. He's the greatest coach of all time, but that doesn't mean he's flawless. He's not above criticism. So it's just the basic, it's okay to admit Bill's not perfect.
Oh,
that we get out there and tweets and articles and, drops on the TV shows and so forth and so on. For one thing, I don't think that I don't think anywhere on the field was out of range for Denver's kicker on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't think Mansfield was out of range from it in that case. He's an excellent kicker.
Oh, exactly.
He's no Justin Rohrwasser caller.
That's right. He's used to kicking in the thin air of Denver. So
Thin air. Nick Cattles has thin takes. The one that got me, Scartzy, in that same thread, again, referencing at Not For Work 9 on Twitter, when he asked him, he goes, I'm sure if you were 6 inches with Belichick, you would say that. Now, this is what we would call creeping Bedardism here. Cattles responds to that, quote, oh, of course I would. What would he do? Fight me?
Fight me?
LOL. He's the greatest coach of all time, but he's not flawless. He's not above criticism. So, that again, this you talked about Rich Teeth auditioning for his old job. This is Cattles auditioning for a job.
Yeah, that's just and of course, everyone can have something to pick apart, like not challenging the white run. I'm not sure they had enough to overturn that. And it also gave them the challenge later in the game for they could challenge the actual touchdown that was scored that wasn't ruled a touchdown.
Yeah, it was pretty blatant, but opportunities lost, but opportunities are not lost for these mediates with the first ever Media of the Week award. I think I got to go with Bedard. I laughed out loud at his infantile minority Patriots fans remark and just ignoring the Mike Evans stuff, willful ignorance of the Mike Evans stuff because he doesn't like the way Mike Williams presents himself. child, please. Who do you give it to?
Oh, boy.
Push, there are no winners here, right?
There are no winners, but I'm going to have to give it to Rich Tief there for that. That was despicable,
I was leading the witness by playing that clip. What you actually heard was a drowning man. Mr. Teeth, what you just said was one of the most insanely idiotic things I've ever heard, and nothing in your incoherent response came close to anything that had rational thought. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul. I hate him. I hate him, Scarzi.
You wouldn't even award him 3.7 points?
Allegedly. Allegedly. Oh, man. The other one, this has got to become another recurring wacky bit. The Upton Bell tweet of the week. The Patriots aren't in Kansas anymore. What? I think the Patriots will be okay as long as the fans remember we are not in Kansas anymore. Not quite as timely as our pop culture references, but still.
I think the Upton Bell tweets lose something being read where they aren't, inexplicable capital letters sprinkled that's here true. And there.
I don't know how to enunciate the capital letters, but I will tell you that the Upton Bell tweet of the week is brought to you by Dr. Robert Leonard's hair failed intern. So that it's not a rug, it's a weave.
True enough.
All right. So would you like to do, Mr. Scartelli, would you like to do a little rapid fire, or do you want to... Should we discuss something, a loss that we've both suffered?
Let's see. I think we'll hold off on the rapid fire just because, special circumstances. We'll Absolutely. Get back to it next time around.
Absolutely. So those of you, if you follow us on Twitter, you may know that I say this all the time, but we're expats of Bruce Allen's Boston Sports Media Watch and the Boston Sports Media Watch message board. It was the old board was a treasure trove of inside jokes, really good comedy, some damn good journalism, breaking the Ken Powers plagiarism story, among others. But the wit and the comedy in there for us, at least for me, I don't want to speak for you, Scarzi, was beyond reproach, and the reason why you and I posted there for a decade and probably even over a decade. LJ Sandwich passed away, or we just found out he passed away earlier this summer. And one of the most cuttingly humorous people that I've ever had the pleasure of meeting and reading his work. Some of his classic lines, as you know, Scarzi, he used to claim that Eddie Andelman drove a caddy that was painted spare rib red in the spirit of the Kowloon. But I want to read, you want to talk about, does he have the other half of this locket? One of his last tweets was regarding one of our favorite people, a recruited walk-on at Rutgers. Who was that guy, Scarzi?
That was almost a coach, Greg Bedard.
So his, LJ Sandwich's disdain was never more evident than it was, particularly for Eddie Andelman. He would call into Eddie Andelman when Rod Borges was on, when he was back on 1510 The Zone, and also his disdain for Ted Sarandis, the humorless ghoul, he dubbed him, was legendary. One of his last tweets was regarding the heavily recruited, almost a walk-on, Greg Bedard. Quote, this is in response to coming out the Bedard, or Bedard saying that he was a recruited walk-on.
Oh, yeah, and if I may interject here, this is a guy who had some knowledge. You know, one of his kids was, a four-year player out at Albany.
Yeah, Albany. Mm-hmm.
So he understands collegiate sports. So there yes, was, this is not some guy, just talking out of turn. So
like me. So this is LJ Sandwich's quote regarding Bedard. Any low-level D1 baseball program is more than happy to find a warm-bodied slug like Bedard to be a practice dummy and not have to shell out any scholarship dollars. They always need help raking the infield dirt and lugging the tarps and batting cages. That load never played. Poetry. Absolute poetry.
And, used the minimal amount of words necessary.
That's true.
That's right. He was there at the beginning. You know, he was there all four variations of the message board, the tag board, yep. the Envision board, the WordPress board, and he made the transition over to the Slack board.
That's true. That's true.
So he will definitely be missed, whether you knew him as, you know, Hot Dog or LJ Sandwich or LJ from Sandwich, or like when he'd call the Andelman Show, Bob from New Hampshire.
That's right.
Where he once was asked by Eddie if he had been out walking his pet rat.
He was a chronicler not only of Eddie, but Eddie's sons and their Scandalman TV show, the Phantom Gourmet, the Grifting Gourmet, as it were. Mm-hmm. So pay for play. You can deal with the Andelman. He had a great nickname for the Andelman sons, which I'm not going to mention here. They're not friendly for work, but they're goddamn hilarious.
Oh yeah, it was a pleasure to have known him, even only as, you know, imaginary friends on a message board.
Right.
He will be missed.
Absolutely, he will be missed. He's survived by his partner and two finger sandwiches, a daughter and a son, and also a little finger sandwich, a granddaughter. So LJ Sandwich, one of the greats, man. One of the greats.
OOTG.
Absolutely. So I'm gonna raise a mug to him later. And I'm going to transition quite awkwardly. Can I hit you with some rapid fire, Mr. Scartelli?
We can do that. We've gotten past that. LJ would want us to go on.
He would want us. He'd probably want us to stop, but in the spirit of going on, he'd want us to stop. What's your favorite LJ Sandwich nickname?
Oh, I think you said it there. It was the humorless ghoul for Ted.
Again, concise and spot on when it came to Ted Sarandis. Someday I'll tell the podcast listeners about my encounter with Ted Sarandis on the phone, but that'll be for another time. Next question. Who gets more rattled by having an ombudsman, Greg Bedard or Diamond Dan Lifshatz?
Oh, there's no two ways about it. The fact that someone is auditing his ridiculous picks is killing Diamond Dan.
I got to give a tip of the cap to Stever on Twitter. I think it's Stever324. I listened a little bit over the weekend to some of Murray and Lifshatz's podcast, and they are rattled with a capital R, an Upton Bell capital R.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next question. Which ghoul makes you grab more quickly to make sure your wallet's still there? John Henry or Jerry Jacobs?
Ah, boy. I think Jeremy Jacobs I know less about, so I'm going to go with the devil I do know, and John W. Henry.
There you go. One's got to go. The Ringer or Barstool?
I'm not familiar with The Ringer, but Barstool, if it went away forever, it would affect my life not at all. So I'm already living in a Barstool-free world.
All right. Speaks well mentally. Of you, my friend. I guess I'm going to have to return that Overs Club jacket I got you for Christmas.
Is it a medium?
You've already eliminated Shank as one media that we could fire into the sun that you wouldn't miss. Who's your number two overall selection?
Who is, let's see, does it have to be a local or can we go national?
You can go wherever you want. It's your rocket you're firing into the sun.
All right, then. Just because if I could do it, I'd be saving us a lot. Joe Buck.
What a moment. Well, that's Jim Nantz. I'm sorry. It's basically Jim Nantz with better hair plugs. Will Futility Lou Maloney be spinning Carrie Underwood records or back carrying John Henry's water in 2021?
He'll be a special assistant to the special assistant for the Boston Red Sox.
The Dwight Schrute of the Boston Red Sox.
Correct.
Michael! One bullet locked room. Who gets it? Felger, Maz, or Big Jim?
Let's
Another real
see.
Sophie's choice, huh?
It is. It is. I'd go with Big Jim.
I don't think you can go wrong with any of those, but that would be high up my list. He'd be high up my list. All right, so that does it for my David Faraday segment. Do you have one for me?
I very much do.
All right, I'm going to put 60 seconds on the clock whenever you're ready.
All right. The Friendly's Lemon Sherbet or the Howard Johnson's Orange Sherbet?
Sherbet, hard pass.
Hard pass.
Hard pass.
Exactly. It's not for everyone.
That's true. Mean and not for everybody, some might say.
Some might say that thing. All right. Who do you got in this, hypothetical Scrabble game? Christopher Gasper or Clark Booth?
Clark Booth. Gasper would have to cheat and have his thesaurus there because I know he's not that smart.
You and I. But unfortunately, the answer is Gasper because Clark Booth is dead.
Is he dead?
He passed a few years ago.
I'd still take Booth.
You'd still take Booth.
Yeah, I'd still take Booth, yeah.
Gasper would disqualify himself by bringing the thesaurus.
It just hit me that Gasper's working at Channel 5 now. He's Clark Booth's spiritual thesaurus living on.
Successor, exactly. There we go.
Ooh, douche chills.
All right. Left Twix or right Twix?
What's a Twix?
Oh, dear.
I've been following Bob Ryan's candy rankings. George Costanza's candy rankings in the car dealer episode of Seinfeld were more official than Bob Ryan's. He didn't know what Twix was?
They've only been around for 40 years.
Well, Ryan's been around for 440 years. He predates the Constitution, so we'll have to give him a pass on that one.
Okay. All right. Can you name one time where you rooted for the Broncos and didn't feel bad about it?
I think I've mentioned this before. I know I've mentioned this to you privately. They are pinstripes in orange, as far as I'm concerned. They're purple and gold wearing shoulder pads. They're Laker purple and gold. The Patriots never beat John Elway when he was a player, ever. I think one of the last times that I cried as a little kid watching a sporting event is when Mosi Tatupu, trying to nurse a lead, fumbled into the waiting arms of Bronco stalwart Dennis Smith, who ran it back 80 yards the other way for a touchdown in the dying minutes of a late season game in Denver. I'm sure I have to with playoff position, but I probably had my own personal crying game right afterwards. How about you?
Well, let's see. What was it? That game where Tebow somehow got a pass over the head of the defense.
Oh,
of the
Denver.
Steelers.
Yeah. Tebow's one shining moment. What a moment. Tebow to Demaryius Thomas on an in-cut in overtime against Pittsburgh. Then they came to Foxborough next week and got curb-stumped. You're right. You just proved me wrong.
Well, exactly. You obviously blocked out the only positive thing that they could have done.
I just need to have that teeth-gnashing hatred for the Broncos, Lakers, and Yankees in my life.
So. Well, here you go. Then you'll like this next question. Right. What is your favorite Broncos cheating scandal that no one remembers? Is it the Von Miller bribing the piss man? The 97 and 98 salary cap violations, or the 98 AFC divisional game where three of their players coated themselves in Vaseline.
Vaseline and silicone, Scartzy. And silicone. I dare I say there is a pattern of behavior among the Shanahan Broncos and breaking the rules. That's neither here nor there.
The important thing is that no one remembers it.
No one remembers this. Listen, Mike Kliss of the Denver Post, you want to talk about the polar opposite. Look up his Twitter feed. He basically gives reach arounds to everybody in the Bronco organization where never is heard a discouraging word. I got to go with the pattern of behavior in the Shanahan Broncos because John Elway needed to cheat the win caller.
There you go.
What happened to Super Bowls and what happened to Elway in Super Bowls caller when he wasn't cheating? 90 seconds, no commercials.
Mm-hmm. All right, and this isn't quite this is a callback kind of thing, but the last time the Broncos won at Foxborough was in 2006. Can you name who the Broncos quarterback was in 2006?
Is it Jake Plummer?
You got it, Jake Plummer.
Oh,
all right, and they beat the Patriots 17.
I got
it. That was pretty good. You could have been greasy.
Yeah, it was
around the time where they swapped it up. But
Greasy was the Broncos uniforms in the 97 and 98 seasons. That's what qualifies as greasy. I want to really quickly, that Von Miller stuff, you want to talk about something that gets swept under the rug? Von Miller cheated the drug test, and it's never mentioned. He's a poster boy for NFL films, ad campaigns. He's front and center for a lot of things the NFL does. Gone. They're one of the favorite franchises. They're owned by the Bolins. Who knows why? We know why the Kraft and the Patriots don't get that same respect. But Von Miller, Jesus, he'll sail into the Hall of Fame while somebody like Rodney Harrison, a wonderful, great, all-time player. I think he has the highest combination of interceptions and sacks in the history of the game. I'm not going to go off on a tangent. I just wanted to pay respect to your recognizing just how filthy the Broncos are.
All right. And one last question from that September 24th, 2006 game. The Patriots scored one touchdown. It was a pass from Tom Brady, who was the quarterback then. And who caught the touchdown for the Patriots that day?
2006. Let's go with Doug Gabriel.
Holy cow.
Really?
You know your Broncos games.
And I was going to go with Andre Davis, but Andre Davis was only there in 2005, and he was a one-tool guy. He was a deep threat. God, Doug Gabriel, the unlamented Doug Gabriel. Doug
Gabriel.
Think about it. They gave up a pick to get Gabriel, and they got Gaffney off the scrap heap, and Gaffney was a really good player for them for several years.
He very much was.
Was that it, Scartzy?
I think that's it on the rapid fire and the addendum there, the callback.
Yeah, and as always, we both win nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this is to start the wrap up here. Our email address is entitledtown@gmail.com. We've gotten several emails checking in on Dave, and we've addressed it previously. Dave's doing well, professionally busy. Scartzy is ably, excuse me, filling in. Did I gargle with Dan Lifschatz's razor blades? Jesus, I sound like I'm using his mouthwash. But
maybe you do have strep throat.
Maybe I was Melvin. Thanks, Al. Melvin Gordon was my Uber driver, so that's maybe where I got it from.
Who's patient zero?
Yeah, patient zero indeed. email address entitledtown@gmail.com. You know the Twitter account if you're following us. It's @entitledtown. Scartzy is @PatScartelli.
Pat Scartell.
I'm sorry. I'm using the formal, the future pretense, past tense.
That's right.
Form of the name. So, all right. Gave the email address. Gave the Twitter account. Scartzy, anything to add? Or are you not the best colored man in the league for nothing?
Exactly.
Well,
Exactamundo.
Exactamundo. Even shout out to our guy Peebsy. Well, I think we've done a podcast, Scartzy. What do you think, and what are we on to?
Let's see. We are on to San Francisco. 3-3, here we come. Turn off your radios.
And if you have kids, I hope you outlive them.